Why are you wearing Vader armor?
David, I am your father.
No, you are not.
Yes, I am.
No, okay, Darth fanboy.
Okay, I got it. Let's do something different this week. What do you got?
Oh, how about a good classic comedy, Tommy Boy?
Holy shnikes!
Yeah, grab your popcorn.
Folks, welcome to Grab Your Popcorn. I am your host, Brian Kroc, and along with me is, of course, David Kalisa.
Good afternoon, everybody.
Yes, so still looking back at last week's episode, for the most part, people agreed with us. I was very happy with that.
Well, that's good.
A couple of people argued against me, but that is fine. One person in this very office argued with me about it, and I convinced them otherwise. I actually changed his mind about the movie because he was like, actually, it was a pretty good movie. And I was like, really? Explain this then. And I went through my list. Here's the flaws, blah, 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 boom, boom, boom. And then he was like, okay, I can see your point.
So you brought him to the dark side.
Yes, the dark side.
It's okay. We have the cookies over here.
Yeah, that is true.
So, no, we are changing it up, switching genres.
Got a comedy.
Yes.
And not just a comedy. But this is like, this is the quintessential, like comedy for the 90s, like Chris Farley, like style.
Oh yeah, this is his most known film, but definitely one of his more quoted films.
Yeah.
Still to this day,
I still quote this. I quoted this movie yesterday, and I wasn't even thinking about it. I wasn't thinking like, oh yeah, we're gonna do Tommy Boy. It's like I was literally just like I put on a coat, and it was a big coat because I'm losing weight, and so it was much bigger than what I was actually wearing. And then I was just like, big guy in a bigger coat, just because. I'm knocking stuff over in the studio. Jeez.
Not that anyone can see that, but it's okay.
Oh, it's fine. It was just a camera. I'm sure it's only worth like $15.
No, but, so, you know, you grew up watching comedies. This was definitely one that you had in your library. This is definitely one that stuck with you and is all around actually a pretty good family film. There's nothing too risque in it, nothing too raunchy in it that you can't repeat or whatever like that.
Most of the cuss words, like, are even replaced with other words that they could use.
Yeah, and it's actually
like holy shnikes.
Yeah, and Chris Farley actually did that on his own because of his upbringing. You know, growing up in his house, his parents had a very strict rule about no cussing. So he created phrases such as that one and just brought it into the film. And it obviously worked really well for his character that he took on as Tommy Boy.
This is definitely a character that truly showcases his brand of humor, which is overly physical and like very, what's the way to describe it?
Well, first of all, he definitely uses his weight to his advantage for his physical comedy. Like he knows he's a bigger guy. He accepts it, but by fully embracing it, he gives us some of the more, you know, hilarious scenes of the film that involve him, you know, using that and everything like it. So, you know, first little bit that uses it is, you know, when he gets his final grades and he's hanging out with his rugby buddies, he's just, you know, so messed up in the scene. He just falls flat on his face and destroys a whole coffee table.
but even before that, I mean, they obviously establish the character and what he's like.
Yeah.
Going from when he was a child to showing him in college. But the thing that I loved is that they show Tommy, and when he's late for class and he's bolting across the campus, I mean, that is Chris Farley running at top speed as fast as he can. And it's just like, it looks hilarious because he's just like,
To like, the point that he scared a poor little guy into the corner and caused total freak out.
Which was, and honestly, like, it's those little things throughout this film that crack me up the most, because they could have very easily just shot a scene of him just, like, running down there. And it would have been funny because he's, you know, a giant dude running. It's like, but the fact that they stuck a scene in there where he's just like, oh, God, there's this small dude in front of him who then cowers in fear of Tommy running at him. And then as Tommy runs by, he's just like, whatever.
You notice the little face on him, just like, what is that dude's problem? Yeah, like, I'm just trying to get the class here, yeah, man.
It's like, there's nothing wrong with what he did. It was purely just the weird reaction of the dude in front of him. But then he's going along, and the two girls walk by, and he stops, and he's like,
hey, how you doing?
Gets that lat syndrome. You know, it's like those dudes who, like,
do you lift, bro? You
know, who, like, put their arms out like they've got huge. Huge lats that, like, force their arms out like bodybuilders.
He just got rolls.
Like, just walking. Like, hey. And then, of course, bolts down. Yeah. It's like, and then it establishes him, though, as, like, basically a childish character.
Yeah.
Who isn't very smart, isn't very driven to make it in his life. In fact, when he answers the history question, of which that was, like, that was like a second grade history question. Okay.
Not a history 201. It's like college.
George final Washington question. And Thomas Jefferson and blank Hancock were framers of the Constitution. It's like, gee, I don't know who that could possibly be. Well, Herbie Hancock.
Exactly. And it's
the piano player.
And obviously, it's super funny that, you know, in that opening scene where he's a kid, he drops his history book running away from the dog.
Yeah.
So that kind of plays into why he got a D+ for his class. So anyway, without getting too much, you know, further into detail in just the one scene. So progresses through, graduates college.
7 years.
Yeah, 7 years. You know, a lot of people go to school for 7 years. Yeah, they're called doctors. But you meet, a friend or acquaintance from his childhood who was
Richard,
also seen.
Who is the other primary player in this, and that is played by David Spade.
Yep, his SNL co-star.
Yes.
And everything.
I love the fact that they establish very early on, even in the kids scene, that Richard is not his friend.
Right. Yeah.
Richard is the kid
they just pick on it.
Who tolerates the existence of Tommy. And especially later on, because now that Richard is working for Tommy's dad,
yeah,
as kind of like, he seems like a high mid-level person.
Yeah, I think, you know, kind of like, you know, handles the accounts, you know, a little bit of the books and everything like that. They definitely don't go into much detail, but you definitely get the sense that he reports directly to Tommy's dad. So that's like you said, it's got to be a little bit of a higher position.
He is the brains, and Tom Callahan Jr., is the heart of the entire operation. Everything revolves around him. It's all about him and his ability to be that personality that gets the job done, that sells constantly, that is pushing to get the next thing done for the factory, for the workers, and for the future of the entire city.
He's what you want a boss or an owner of a company like that to be.
Yes.
You know, he is always in your corner. He is always looking to better everybody. He doesn't want to stay still, and he wants everything to work out for, you know, everyone in general.
Yes. He is established very early on as, like, the thing that holds everything together.
Right.
He is the gravity that holds the moons around him. And Tommy is a man child, but the thing that I loved about it is that when he first shows up and he's going around in the factory and they're giving the tour, Tommy, like, one, knows everybody who's there.
And everyone knows him.
Everybody knows him. I mean, like, even the guy, he's like, you know, he's like, hey, Tommy, it's like, you remember so-and-so from the bank. Yes, sir. Blah, blah, blah. Yeah. You know, good to see you again. And, like, all of that. It's like he's established that he is a well-loved person to the point of, even when he's doing goofy things and screwing things up, people forgive him because he's Tommy.
Right, he's Tommy, but he's also a likable guy. It's not like he's screwing things up and being a dick about it.
Yeah.
He's just aloof
and
everything like that, and that's just part of his personality.
Yeah.
And they accept it, and, you know, because he's good people, like his dad.
Mm-hmm.
So you get a little bit of backstory of where the company is trying to go by opening up a
brake pad division,
a new division for their company to expand it and you know, create more jobs and everything. And that's why the bank people are there trying to get a loan. And so, you know, Tommy, being fresh college grad, comes home to all this good news. You know, his dad's expanding this. He gets his own office.
Yeah.
And, you know, why not? He's been here 10 seconds.
With a fridge. He can put six packs of soda or yogurt.
So
I love the response of his dad, though. He's like, you can put anything in there that you want to keep cold.
Yeah. Like, I know that you drink, son. It's cool. You graduate from college. So then he goes home with his dad, finds out that he's going to get a new family.
Yes, with the classic recreated scene from the movie Ten, which is where the joke comes in, is like, you know, she's a 10.
Yep, she's like a 10. So,
but I do love the fact, though, that when she comes out of there, Tommy's first reaction is, Is she for me?
No, like, son, that's for me. Sorry, Dad. Oh, my bad.
That's great.
So
it's such a funny scene, but yeah, it establishes that Tom's first wife, Tommy's mother,
yeah,
passed away, and he hasn't had anyone else in his life. Just been him and Dad. And then while Tommy was away at college, he met this lady at what he called a fat camp, like spa retreat thing, where she was a trainer, and then they fell in love, and now they're about to get married. And then this sets up the other character involved, which is her son, whose name is currently eluding me.
And we can't IMDb it for a fact that we will get into later on when we discuss the cast.
Let's see. Paul. That's who it is. Yes. Paul is established, which then leads to one of my favorite lines in the movie, though, which there's a ton of favorite lines in the movie, but it's like, he's like, you must be Tommy. He's like, brothers don't shake. Brothers got a hug.
And he is established as just a pure dick.
Yes. He is a dick from the get-go.
He gets off the bus. He smacks the kid in the face through the window, tosses his empty milk carton in the baby carriage as it strolls by.
Yeah.
And then heads off to the house. Like, you know, he's just...
They establish, like, from the split second he shows up, that this dude is not nice. It's like, all the things that are great about Tommy is that, like, he loves people. He's around. Like, yeah, he's a screw-up, but he's a good person.
He's likable.
It's like Paul is the complete opposite of that, even to the point of later on when Tommy's trying to bond with him and stuff. It's like, it's just one thing after another that he keeps insulting him on, but Tommy doesn't fully grasp that he's actually being insulted,
because he sees the good in people. He just, yes, he likes everybody, and he's just so happy that he, you know, that this person's going to be family. He's going to have full yeah, circle again. So,
but I also do love the line later on when he's spraying him with the water. And he goes, did you eat paint chips as a child? And he goes, why? He doesn't say no.
But he doesn't say yes.
He doesn't say yes. He just goes, why?
Which then is like, okay, yeah, you did.
Okay.
That explains like, a lot more.
Yeah. Further explanation. This later on it also introduces the other character in the movie whose name is also currently eluding me, the girl.
Oh, the quote-unquote love interest, if that's what you want to kind of put it as.
Where is it?
It's subtle chemistry in the background.
Michelle, yes. That's who it is, yeah. And she's kind of there, like, to...
She's their shipping department. You know, she handles all the billing and then the, you know, all
yeah,
the shipping
all the, orders, all the orders. All the orders and shipping, yep, go through her. And all of that, but she was an old school friend of Tommy's.
Yep, and he also knew her. You know, the
brother,
the uninvolved or, you know, unseen brother who helps a little bit later on in the film and everything like that. So he's, yes, familiar with the family.
Who's a cop now?
He's familiar with the
which they used to steal donuts. So he thought that was funny.
Yeah. So you know. So everyone's familiar, everyone's, you know, buddies and whatnot, and yeah.
But Michelle really becomes, like, yeah, she's a love interest, which is, you know, established kind of later on, but she becomes more of a, like, confidant. Like, she becomes a real friend to Tommy throughout this process. And she's basically that from the get-go.
Right.
Like once she's back in his life, like, that's it. And he you can tell that Tommy's just the type of guy who's like, okay, this person's here. She's my friend. Yay, friend!
Exactly. So you get the main character set up from there. You understand kind of what all's going on. And then we
get to the wedding.
Big scene, which is the wedding. And yes. Really well shot. Once again, chock full of great one-liners.
Yeah, tons. Especially, it's like, what is it, like six whiskey sours in? It's like, and I can still sell the bastard.
Right, because that's when he uses the phrase, you know, I could get a good look at a T-bone by sticking my head up a bull's ass, but I'd rather take the butcher's word for it.
Yeah.
Which is utterly butchered later on in the film by yes. Tommy Floyd, because he's, once again, not his dad. But anyway, you know, wedding scene is happening like that, and
Tommy and Tom do a little musical number. After Tom and Beverly have said I do.
Yep, and Richard's going around with the camera getting, you know, some hellos and everything like that from the guests.
I still love the part, though, where it's where he's, like, in the camera talking to the other guy, and the other guy's like, man, what'd I do to get a piece of that? And he's just like,
oh, no.
He's like, oh, no. He's like, Richard, do you have an edit button? He's like, it'll cost you.
So, yeah, so then it goes into this great music number, which actually brings me to the point, because, you know, this was a, you know, great song to do. But overall, this film has an excellent soundtrack.
It does.
It all fits in very well with the scenes, both lyrically and also just beat-wise, for the tone of the film and whatever's happening.
Mm-hmm.
But it goes into the musical number, and unfortunately, it tragically ends in the middle of the song with his father having heart failure.
Yes.
And passes away from it before his reception is even over.
Which, just to jump out of there, like I was talking about before, production-wise, is a great shot, because it's Tom lying down on the ground and all the people surround him, and the camera is over top and it's looking down, and then all of a sudden it switches to the ground perspective looking at all the people around him, and then it pans out a bit, and that's when you realize that this isn't at the wedding, this is now at the funeral. Because Beverly is wearing black and Tommy's wearing a different, you know, he's wearing a suit and stuff like that. And it, like, pans out from there. And, like, it's this really good scene because, well, one, it's rainy and it's dreary, which is always a great expression of people who are, you know, mourning. But the shot of Tommy standing there at the funeral, the look on his face is heartbreaking.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, to fully embody what it would. Probably at least.
And he didn't even say anything. It was just a look on his face that was that good.
Yeah.
And this sets up basically the rest of the movie.
I mean, this is what pushes the boulder, you know, down the hill and sets forth all the future motions that happen.
So with Tom gone, everybody's unsure about the future of the company. Now the primary shareholders are, like, the board members, Tommy, and now Beverly, who was Tom's legally wedded wife at the time when he died. And so they ended up, like, trying to figure out what they were going to do. The bank was like, well, why would we give you a loan now? It's like, Tom was the only one who kept everything running. So why we're not going to give you crap. And Tommy's like, I will give up everything that I have that's at stake in this company to open up the new brake pad division. And I will go out and sell this.
Right. I mean, it's a complete, I mean, that's like just the, in one scene, he 180s his complete aloof, happy-go-lucky character to this person that is going to just sacrifice everything and try his best with no knowledge or experience in what his dad did to just try and save this company that his family built. And that's been around since before the Depression.
You see that moment, too, when the guy's like, well, who's going to sell, you know, who's going to sell this? And it's like, ding. He raises his hand. It's like, I'll do it. And it's such a great moment because you look on his face. He's just like, I don't know what's going to happen. But he's like, I got to rescue this. I've got to rescue the plant and blah, blah, blah. And who's going to sell it?
Me.
I'll do it.
Yeah.
Like, why not?
So
to keep the legacy of his father going and to keep the legacy of the factory going, And to keep the people working, he goes and sets out onto the road, to which they're also like, Richard, you're going with him.
Because, you know, you're really smart. You answered to his dad, and you know, yes, more, you know, just about as much as he did, you know, for the, you know, logistic wise and, you yeah. know, on paper and everything like that. So you're gonna tag team with him.
I also want to point out that, honestly, that scene right there with the boardroom is still one of the funniest scenes that I've ever witnessed in my life.
Please tell me because it's the old couple.
Because it's the old couple. It's like, he's like, if the factory dies, the town dies. And then the lady, without skipping a beat, is just like, that's when the whores move in.
And then Paul's like, oh, what was that? And then everyone's like, oh, God, what are we going like, to
do? Not again. Not again with the whores.
$20 for rent. Might as well just go use it.
Spend it on the whore.
I visited a prostitute once during the war. My life's been living hell ever since.
And then she's like, oh, those little whores out there shaking their little booties and
then
stuff.
Richard's like, I like her idea.
Richard, though, out of nowhere, she's like, it's like, I like her idea. It's such a great moment.
And, and that's some of the brilliance.
Comedy.
Right. Well, and that's some of the brilliance in the writing is that for such a pivotal, what it's supposed to be, like, it's a pretty scary part for a lot of these. You know, a lot of the characters' lives want is also a really funny scene for the viewer.
And it's not even Tommy.
No.
It's not Tommy or
no, he's the most serious out of this whole entire ordeal, yeah, except when he's behind Richard kind of dancing, like, ha, 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 you're going to come with me.
Everybody is fairly serious, and then all of a sudden this one lady, just that's when the whores come in.
So,
it's so great. It's such a great comedic scene, and to not even give it to the main players, just awesome. So, that is good quality writing.
That's fantastic writing. So now you get the exhilarating feeling of like, yes, so you get the son and the right hand man, they're going to be paired up now, and they're going to go on the road together, and Lord knows what's going to happen with these two people,
yes,
that have grown up not really liking each other or being friends, are now going to have to share, a car and a road together and go through all these meetings and whatnot. So they go on the road and gets to the first location to make a sales call, and they're outside getting all jacked up for the meeting, all ready to go. I got to do this.
Yes, which leads to another really great scene of Tommy getting rejected numerous times,
we don't take no shit from nobody. We don't take no prisoners. No, we don't take no for an answer.
Oh, that's like, right. No for an answer. Take no for an answer.
Yeah, it's a no. Oh, okie dokie.
like, nope. Okay.
See you later.
And then the guy who gives him a maybe.
Creates
one of the best scenes in the entire movie. Mind you, there are a lot of really great scenes.
No, this is like easily top three.
But
like,
I have to wonder if he didn't just improvise that.
I would not put it past him in the least, especially being SNL cast, because a lot of that is improv.
Yeah, and that was his background. His background was improv.
And so, the fact that, he just sees his model cars, like, well, I'll just use these as demonstration.
Yeah. And people are just like, whatever you want.
I wish I could find a blooper reel, because I wonder how many takes it took for them not to laugh while he was doing his scene,
you gotta wonder if like every cut back and forth was actually like just a moment where they had to stop it and like put something different in.
Well, because what's great in SNL fashion, because you watch a lot of him and like David Spade skits on there and whatnot, like David Spade has to cover his mouth a lot during those because of how hard he's laughing.
Yes.
There's definitely two scenes I know for a fact in that scene where you see his hand come up in motion.
Yeah.
Where I'm pretty sure he's about to lose his shit from laughing.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's pretty good leader indication. Like you said, it's probably improv.
My favorite line, though, from that, and I still quote this one to this day, is he goes, and here comes the meat wagon. And the medic's like, oh my God.
Meanwhile, the
new guy's in the corner puking his guts out. All because you wanted to save a few pennies. I've said that line so many times to people. Like, any of those. Just like the, oh my God. It's like, new guy's in the corner puking his guts out. It's like, or all because you wanted to save a few pennies. Like, I've said each one of those lines in different instances, like, just because it fits. So many times.
The thing that I would not want to know is how many people did not understand the reference, because that would be a shame, if it was like around half.
Well, of course. I mean, you're always going to run the risk of nobody getting the reference.
Right, but what I'm bringing up is, like, if it was, like, a vast majority that didn't get it because, you know, like we established, this should be a must-watch for anybody that wants to feel good.
So, this entire bit of them going from place to place to place to place and getting rejected finally culminates in, like, the shift where
first of all, they beat the hell out of each other.
Yes, yes. their relationship gets strained. The car gets damaged a lot.
It gets destroyed. Damaged a lot is an understatement. It gets destroyed by a not dead deer.
And Tommy ripping the door off.
What'd you do?
Leaving the oil when he puts oil into the car, it's like, and then causes the thing to fly up and all that. Like, the car just gets completely trashed by the end of the movie. But after they beat each other up, of which, like, Richard just smacks the crap out of him.
He takes a 2x4 to his face. And he's like, it doesn't hurt here so much.
Or right here. There's the line, like, right across his face, the bruise.
Nope, ship shape.
Like, oh, okay. And then the waitress walks up and she goes, my God, what happened to your face? And he's like, I knew it.
So.
But this interaction is what actually transitions Tommy from being the extremely goofy and complete failure that he is at the time to actually succeeding at something, and he does it all for chicken wings.
Hey, you know what? Everyone has their motivation, and a lot of times food is going to be really good motivation.
And that's what I loved is that, like, Richard, though, is sitting there, and he's watching this entire thing unfold.
And you look
at his face in there. That is some top-notch acting from David Spade.
It's both top-notch acting, and it's also really good directing, because while this dialogue is going on, they're not showing the dialogue. They're mm-hmm. focusing on Richard's face for a good amount of it, because then you get to watch him, like you said, his reaction to it all.
Yeah.
And it's like, holy crap, is this really happening right now? Like,
yeah.
Is he really doing this? And then sure enough.
Then she's like, all right. It's, yeah, like, it's like, I'll go back there and I'll see what I can do.
And, you know, he about fell out of his chair like, what the hell was that?
Yes. And he's just like, you sold her. And he goes, well, you know, it's like, I figured, it's like, even if I didn't get it, we still had that pizza in the trunk.
So.
It's like, which is brilliant. It was basically like. Well, I knew that all I had to do was try to get what I actually wanted, because it didn't really matter, because I knew I had this other thing. It's like, just in case. And so that gave him the confidence to try and actually do it.
So then they go off to their, you know, next stop and whatnot. And then, you know, Richard is still, you know, dragging his feet on. It's like, here we go again. You know, the conversation is actually going better. You know, they're actually conversing back and forth. They're going through a factory.
Which then leads to him butchering the butcher reference.
He's about to mess up that line. Richard stops him. He's like, no, don't go down that road again.
Yes.
And the guy cuts him off, and Richard's just like, hey,
chicken wings.
Wings. He's like, oh, okay then. So then he follows him upstairs, and he does one of the greatest bits about guarantees. And... He goes, if you want me to shit in a box of Mark and Guaranteed, I can do it for you. I got spare time. But he just delivers this great line of dialogue to the guy and whatnot, and ends it really well. And you can tell that his, you know, he channels his dad's energy.
Yes.
His, you know, that inner salesman that was, you know, that he's been around his whole life and everything, and just, you know, kind of goes with it. And the guy's like, okay, I'll buy from you. And then they, of course, immediately take it as rejection because that's what they're used to.
Huh?
Like, what?
Yeah.
So
this is like the turning point for the entire movie, because it's the character coming around, coming into his own, realizing the potential that he actually has. And then from that moment on, it's just like, yes, 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 yes. Who's selling everything.
Sells after another.
And there are some other really, really great moments that happened throughout this, mainly like the hotel scene, which leads to the fat guy in a little coat moment. But the other ones that I loved is when Richard is spying on the girl. And, well, one, Tommy walks by to begin with, and he's like, and he does that whole like strutting thing, and he's just like, It's like, you know where the gym is? Or he said something along, I forgot what it was. But he says,
you know where the weight room is?
The weight
and
room.
And Rich is like, Tommy, get out of there. Don't give her the weight room thing. He knows exactly what line he's going to use. And he's not even by him. He's across the hotel. And sure enough, he does it. And he's like, oh, never mind. I'll go check it out. Idiot.
But then Richard is spying on the lady. And the lady, like, you know, takes her clothes off. Obviously, they don't show it. It's a family film. Yep. Like, but you hear him unzip his pants, and then Tommy comes barging in, and he bolts back into
the bed,
at which Tommy, immediately realizing what Richard was up to, then starts making fun of him. But it's such a – some of the lines are delivered so well, especially when he's like, you know, he doing the stuff, and then he all of a sudden goes – he's like, hey, Richard. It's like, who's your favorite little rascal? Mine was Spanky. I remember hearing that line because, I mean, I'm like, I was a child that was raised on like old TV and old movies and all of that. It's like, and as I'm sure your dad also raised you on, my dad's a little bit older than yours. And so, like, I watched the Little Rascals growing up, not the movie.
Right.
I'm talking like the original Little Rascals.
The black and white. Yeah.
Yes. Originally known as Our Gang, of which, if I'm wrong about that, Dad, I'm sorry. Please correct me.
No, you're right. It used to be Our Gang.
And the Little Rascals. And so when he brought up Spanky, I was like, the adults will get this joke. I'm pretty sure a lot of the kids won't. I was like, but I got it because I actually knew who the Little Rascals were.
Oh, maybe we were watching one of those old-time films with what's that guy's name, that old actor, Buddy Whackett?
It's such a great moment.
And that whole scene actually has a pretty noticeable continuity error, you know, once you watch it a few times and realize it. So, as you pointed out, he's standing at the window and, you know, he's, you know, spying on her or whatnot.
Yeah.
He gets excited and you hear the sound effect of a zipper going down. But then when Tommy comes back in the room and he runs to the bed, when Richard runs to the bed, he's in boxers. I've never owned a pair of boxers in my life that have zipper on them.
True. That is true.
So
maybe his pants dropped.
It's one of those things where, as soon as I notice it, it's one of the things that I catch now. But
yes.
I'm sure it was just added in there for, humor's
sake. So there's a lot of great moments in this entire bit. So fat guy in a little coat, the jokes about Richard, the housekeeping.
Oh dear God!
Housekeeping.
Yeah.
Need towel.
I watched this for the umpteenth hundredth time last night again, but it's one of my wife's favorite movies, and so she watched it with me, and you know she laughs probably harder than I do while watching it, and I caught why. It's when he goes from his regular voice to yelling, you know, when it gets that sort of like deep scraggly. I can't even explain it, but you know, it totally changes tone and demeanor. You can't even really tell it's the same person talking. But when he goes into that yell, you know, at any point in the film, when I was like, she just loses her crap while watching it. And like, then it causes me to laugh more because like I noticed it and I'm like, you know, it's just hilarious.
So this also for me is another line that I repeat, not because of the housekeeping bit, but because of Richard's response to it when he finally says something along the lines of, like, you want me jack you off or something like that? And he goes, what kind of hotel is this? I've said that line to my wife like at least 50 times.
Still
and she's never understood what it actually meant. But she's just like, she thinks I'm just being goofy. I was like, but in reality, I'm quoting this movie. Like, so thanks, Tommy Boy.
There we go.
Humor that continues on years after.
So we have this whole big, you know, line of scenes that are just absolutely hilarious and, you know, a lot of good acting and transitioning for the story.
Yes.
And we travel back home to Sandusky and we go back to the antagonist, Paul, who is trying all these different ways to sabotage Tommy in his efforts of saving the company because
they want the company to sell.
They want it to sell to get all the money.
Yes, to sell to the oh crap, what's
Zelensky,
the auto parts king? Is that
played by Dan Aykroyd?
Yes. So there's an offer on there from Zelensky, the auto parts king, to buy the factory outright.
Right.
And it's a good offer. And anybody who has stock in the company will make a lot of money if they sell, you know, at that time when their stock is still high.
Right.
And so that's what they're trying to do. That's what Paul is trying to do. And you, and it also establishes that Beverly is in on the whole thing.
Yeah, yeah. You then find out through a little bit of investigating and whatnot that Paul and Beverly are husband and wife, not mother and son.
Yes.
And so anyway, so you get these funny scenes of him trying to sabotage the company. Of, you know, he tries to shoot the trucks and either blow them up or shoot the tires out.
Yeah.
He gets mauled by one of the guard dogs. And then he goes into Michelle's office and messes up all the orders in her computer.
Mm-hmm.
And as you know, the same day that he does this is the day that they make their quota. They sold the amount that they needed to.
Yep.
Super happy. And then they get back home after making the sale only to find out
all the orders were screwed up.
All the orders were screwed up, and people, you know, over half of them have been canceled, so there's no way that they're going to be able to make it now. They're going to have to sell.
Yep.
So it's the, you know, kind of the drop point of the film of, you know, good guys did all this effort only to unfortunately fail.
Yes.
Which is a really neat also transition because, once again, it's more of, you know, showing, you know, defeated Tommy, and you also see drunk Richard.
Yeah.
Which is a funny scene of them, you know, kind of driving around. And, you know, Tommy's really worried about the town. You know, obviously, you mm-hmm. know, that, I mean, people are going to be laid off, and it's going to just affect more than just that.
Which also leads to another line that I've said numerous times. I don't know why, but I seem to quote Richard quite a bit. But it's Richard when he goes, it's like, you know, fish in a barrel. It's yeah. like, it's like town's the barrel, people fish.
So they, you know, they're mourning and whatnot, and then they elude the cops with a great little bee tactic. And Tommy looks up, sees the billboard for Zelensky, and he's like, you know what? We got one last effort. Let's go to him, see if he'll make the – if he'll buy the amount we need to sell. And, you know, if I fail, you know, the company's gone by the next day anyway.
Yeah, so what's the point?
So, you know, they make the plan to fly to Chicago and talk to the man himself.
Yes.
Which sets up for another one of what I consider the top three funniest scenes in the movie. They have no other choice but to bribe some of the stewardesses or male pilots, I guess.
Flight attendants.
To give them their uniforms, which if you look at it, the two guys that walk by, neither one of them are the same shape or size as Mm-mm. Richard or Tommy, yet the clothes fit.
Yep.
And so they go on the airplane and and take the place of the flight attendants and utterly botch everything that can happen on a flight. The opening dialogue with Richard on the radio and Tommy doing his little dialogue bit
and just the acting out whatever Richard like needs yeah. him to do.
I'll just bullshit this and try to guess where the wings of the plane are and the exits. Oh yeah, and then Richard is just like, you know, life jackets. These we may need. You know, it's my guess. It's going to be a mountain. And it's like, oh, my God, what are you doing? You know, you just take one of these, put it on your neck, and you pull the string, and he grabbed a child life preserver and almost suffocates to death.
Yup.
You know, grabs a pen off of a woman's breast pocket, which would nowadays get him arrested. And saves himself. So anyway, flight goes on, and then he has to change back into regular clothing. Lining up for the funny bathroom change scene.
That's also one of the only times that they do something out of like the realm of possibility.
How so?
So Richard steps in and then immediately steps out changed.
Right.
Like there's no time in between him getting in and changing and stepping out.
Yeah, well,
they only do that a couple of times throughout the entire movie. But then that one, it's just like, I love the fact though that they actually reference it.
They reference, yeah, they acknowledge it. Cause Tommy's looking at him like,
Tommy goes, it's like Richard goes in, comes back out a split second later, and Tommy's just like, what the? How did you?
The wheels are turning, but he's just like, he's not able to comprehend, like, how did that just happen? So, so then he goes in, and he's like, okay, well, I guess I can be that quick. And he ends up absolutely destroying the whole bathroom, which is just another just great scene of physical comedy to him. I don't even know how. I mean, that could not have been comfortable to film. That just, you know, mm-hmm. every bit of that, mm-hmm. you know, looked like it either hurt in some way or just was extremely hard to film. Great camera angles though, with either getting just right underneath him or having the camera you know, planted above him in the ceiling, looking down on him the whole time. And so they get through all that. They finally get changed. They get off, and they take the taxi to Zelensky's main office in downtown Chicago to confront him to try and save the company.
Yes, which they do. And so we're going to jump a little bit here because they really, it's just them pitching to Zelensky while he's doing his he's doing like a live commercial or something, wasn't he?
No. He was there to meet with the board of, you know, Tommy's company and everything like that to sign over the papers.
Yeah.
So yeah, he was there on business, you know, to take over the company and to get what he wanted. And so they pitch him, and that fails in the elevator.
Yeah.
Goes on to him realizing that his family is there without him knowing that they were there.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, at this point, they're sitting out there once again defeated, but Michelle comes in to save the day because she has her unintroduced brother, who was previously mentioned in the film.
Yep.
You know,
so they looked him up.
Yep, looked him up and found out that they're con artists and that none of this was legal in any sense.
So
Tommy comes up with this brilliant idea to get back into the boardroom by making himself look like a suicide bomber with road flares.
Yes.
I have a plan. Yikes.
But this leads to Zelensky actually making a deal.
Well, but not by his own choice, because yes, he brings in the camera crew and he totally sort of blackballs on a move that probably his dad would have done.
Yeah.
Hey, you know, what's your line from the commercials? You know, I make car parts for the American working man. And he's like, I got this order here to save 300 American working men and women back in my hometown.
Yeah.
Puts him on the spot, gets the deal done. And then once the cameras are off, they you know, expose, you know, Paul and Beverly.
Yes.
For what they are. And
which, doesn't Beverly like try to hit on Zelensky?
Oh, she does. And yeah, she actually ends up with him. She doesn't go to jail for fraud or anything like she should.
No, of course not.
She just ends up with the multimillionaire that, you know, that she was hitting on, you know, because she's a 10 and all.
Yes.
And then Paul's like, well, screw you, I'm not going to jail, and leaves his wife there in the boardroom.
Yeah.
And tries to make his escape, only in epically fail fashion.
Yes.
Which is another continuity error, because as he is, you know, taking his flight, you know, down with the test drive car, when it hits the wall,
physics, he kind of flies off to the side.
Physics would dictate he would have just flown into the wall and been obliterated. But yeah,
he would have splattered.
He flies off the screen and lands in a you know, little test drive chair or whatever like that, and then gets what looks to be like a 50-pound sack of sand into his nuts.
Yep.
So they get arrested. Tommy saves his town.
Yep.
And is a very big hero. And, of course, with him being the primary shareholder, does not sell to Zelensky, gets to keep the company name, and gets to open the new brake pad division.
Yeah.
Happy, happy ending.
Well, this is what I like about it, though, is that they could have ended, like, right there, basically. Yay, let's cheer. But they don't end it there. They end it back on the water again with Tommy out in the water on the boat, like, with the sailboat, and he's just out there, the joke being before that there was no wind, and so it's like there's no real point in being in a sailboat if you don't have wind. And he just starts talking to his dad, and it's such a nice, beautiful moment, because it's him having a conversation with the man that he misses and loves. And then, like, as he finally, like, concludes it, all of a sudden there's a little bit of a breeze, and the boat starts to take off. And
he gets hit with the mast.
gets hit. And then, but it's still just such a really beautiful scene to kind of go out on, because it's like, yes, it's like he saved it. It's like, it's great. His dad has been with him the whole time, and smack to the face. Roll credits, done and done. All in all, this movie is amazing. It is so well written, and it is so well directed, and it is so well acted by everybody. There are like only a couple of little errors that we can find in the movie. You can go through IMDb and actually look at like some of the other like errors that are
right,
popped up, you know. But for it is such just a well crafted comedy film. And it's such a feel-good kind of comedy film, too.
Well, I tell you how, like, full of comedy it is. I mean, we hit a lot of major scenes and, like, went through quite a few lines. And we probably didn't even hit half of them.
No, we didn't. I mean, there was a ton of stuff that we completely passed over. All the singing in the car.
Oh, yeah.
Don't you remember you told me you love me, baby?
Well, and the whole scene, you know, and then also the whole failure scene, you know, after they, you know, hit the deer and he, you know, fluffs his hair up in, yes, you know, crazy fashion. But the, so many other things, and it's just like, you know, the, for a film to have that many, and, you know, and it's not a long film,
yeah,
or whatever.
No,
like
no,
that,
it's not.
You know, hour and a half, hour, 40 minutes, whatever.
I can verify what it is. Just 1 second. 97 know, minutes long.
Right in between.
Right in between. But I would like to point out that Tommy Boy actually does have one of the most realistic scenes.
And what would that
in
be?
In cinematic history.
Realistic scenes.
They're driving along.
Okay.
They're singing along. It's the end of the world as we know it. Gets through the chorus. Gets to the verse.
And can't think.
And everyone in human history who's ever actually heard that song has no idea what the what he's actually saying. And so they're just like,
I'm going to make a confession here on this episode. I do that with just about every song because
exactly.
I'm not a music person to begin with.
Therefore,
and my wife,
the most realistic scene in human history.
She gets so pissed off. She goes, you don't even make an attempt to say the words. You just trail off and mumble. She goes, why are you even trying? She goes, shut up. Just let them sing the song. I go, but I like it.
Yeah, that's so good. All right, so let us actually get into the cast here. Let's just go from the top. Let's just start with Chris Farley.
Go for it.
Okay, so Chris Farley comes up through a lot of the improv stuff, Second City, I believe, in Chicago, and makes his way to SNL, where he becomes a mainstay player almost immediately due to his over-the-top physical antics and just like self-deprecating humor. That is amazing. And to this day, still has some of the funniest skits that were ever done on that show.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I easily.
Mean, it's, I mean,
living in a van is, down by the river. You've got, like, the Chippendale scene.
He's as much of a staple of SNL history as, like, Belushi or Aykroyd are.
Easily.
I mean, you can't think of the show and think of one of those groups without thinking of him at some point.
Yes, and of course, Chris Farley went on to do a few other films, including Black Sheep. He had a bunch of bit parts in other movies, too.
Yeah, Black Sheep, but then he had a co-star lead with Matthew Perry, and what was that one?
Almost Heroes.
Which was good. That had a lot of physical comedy. That one I don't think did as well as some of his other films, but
I mean,
he,
like,
definitely showcased a lot of the same humor.
Yeah,
and everything like that.
But I mean, he had a small part in like Wayne's World, in Coneheads, Wayne's World 2,
Billy Madison,
Airheads, which is still a great movie. And one of his other lines that I quote all the time is like, you know, it's like, well, what are you gonna do? Improvise. And that's when he rips off the nipple ring off the dude. But then he does Tommy Boy, which is amazing. He does Black Sheep, which is also really funny. And then he does Beverly Hills Ninja, which is...
That's a very underrated
film.
It
is a very underrated film.
I don't see that on TV as much as, you know, any of his other films are. And that actually, and you know, considering that it has the Oriental actor Robin Shaw, who's known for Liu Kang and Mortal Kombat films.
Yes.
But it's also got Chris Rock in it,
yeah,
who is absolutely hilarious. You know, plays the, you know, the bellhop or whatever.
Yeah.
That's really intrigued by him being the Great White Ninja. But then, anyway, no, that's a, that's
he
another
in,
great movie.
He was in Dirty Work, where he was missing a nose, which
with
is
Norm
great.
McDonald,
and he's like in the land of the skunks, the man with half a nose is king.
And then, you're like, what? Where did that come from?
And then, unfortunately, I believe the last thing he was actually like in was the movie with Matthew Perry, which was Almost Heroes.
Yeah.
And then this is where, tragically, along the lines of Belushi, we lost Chris Farley due to drugs and alcohol and that
just
kind of stuff.
Got too far into the life and let it take hold of him.
Yeah.
Gone from us way too soon.
Let's see. So how old are you now, David?
I am going to be 30 in January.
There you go. Farley was 33 when he died. I am 36 now, so he was right smack dab in the middle of our age groups, and just right there, man.
It's weird to think about. Really weird to think about.
Yeah, it's pretty trippy. But yeah, so that's Chris Farley for you, man. I mean, it was such a tragic moment to lose him as an actor, but as a lot of these characters are, and I mean, I don't mean him as in like a fictional character, but as in the character that he was, he lived a hard life of partying.
Yeah,
and it finally caught up to him.
The good thing to look at the short life, but big legacy.
Big, massive legacy.
Yes. So well, next up we have
David Spade.
Co-star David Spade, who's still active today.
Yes. And I've been actually meaning to check out his new movie that he recently came up with, which was Father of the Year.
I have not.
It actually looked pretty decent from what I saw
about it.
He basically plays a deadbeat dad who's trying to kind of like make amends with his son.
Okay. So,
yeah.
Not the most original story plot, but hopefully it does well.
No, but he's been doing a bunch of these movies with more SNL people throughout the years. Had some hits, had some misses, but him and Tommy Boy is like the epitome of David Spade humor.
Oh, absolutely. And it's actually a little tidbit that you find on. I can't remember if it's in a documentary I saw about the film or if it was about Chris Farley. But
I am Chris Farley.
It might have been that, or it just might have been something that, like, it was like, you know, somebody did like a bid on like the anniversary of Tommy Boy.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, they both had a movie poster for Tommy Boy, you know, like in their office or whatever like that. Well, each of them signed each other's movie poster.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they put like goofy shit on, like, you know, well, we'll never be movie stars, like, you know, something along those lines. You know, just because, like, well, you know, we started a movie together. It's got good probability. Let's just sign each other's stuff. And then, obviously, it took off where it did and everything like that. And I just thought that was kind of a sort of like a comedic thing of, like, you know, let's do the Hollywood thing. And we'll just sign each other's stuff because, you know, we're the stars of this film. But you also go to find out that he did not attend the funeral of his good friend because, you know,
he couldn't bring himself to do it.
Too hard on him.
You know, which is understandable.
Oh, yeah. You know, you spend that much time with somebody just on the show or production of a film. I mean, you know, that's, you know, for a lot of people, you know, especially back then, for as long as it took to produce stuff, you know, technology was obviously where it was, so it took longer.
And
you spent more time with them than, you know, they did their families.
Yeah, the psychology of that kind of stuff is actually best summarized by Pete Townsend of The Who, actually.
Okay.
When asked about Keith Moon and like some of the other people who died doing these types of crazy things, you know, due to drugs and stuff. He goes, these people were my friends. He's like, they were your idols. It's like, they were people you worshiped. He goes, but these were my friends and I hate them for what they did.
Yeah.
And that's exactly, I guarantee that as much love and adoration that Farley had, I guarantee that some of the SNL people who knew him best and all of that are still mad at him for going out like that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, you know, without getting too far off, I just didn't want to bring that. That was, you know, I felt that was pretty important to, you know, discuss or whatever like
absolutely.
That. So, no, David Spade. So, you know, Tommy Boy probably, you know, that I feel, you know, really launched David Spade into like a good
absolutely.
Amount of stardom.
Yes. He
had good bits on SNL. He was known for it, but you know, once Tommy Boy hit, you know, hit
that was
and everything
he
like
was
that,
he was a movie star after
yeah,
that.
He was going to be part of Hollywood for sure.
Which led to Joe Dirt, which is still a really funny movie and a couple of other ones too, but Grown Ups 2 was just total crap. I don't care what you say. But let's go ahead and move on to the next one on the list, which would be Brian Dennehy. So Brian Dennehy is such an awesome actor.
That's an understatement. He is such a pivotal, high-quality actor, you know, in all of his films. You know, he brings it 110%. You know, and to see him, you know, in a lot of his earlier films or even films around the same time.
I mean, he's still
making
movies, too.
Yeah.
That's the great thing about it.
You know, but he has such a good, like, stern, like, serious face, and a lot of his, you know, a lot of the characters I've seen in films will not, you know, kind of revolve around that.
Yeah.
So to see him in this film as for being the, you know, happy-go-lucky, just sort of, not goofball, but definitely goofy dad and everything like that in this film was just so awesome.
So real quick then, what is your, like, favorite role of his?
Oh, they'd have to be the sheriff in First Blood.
Easy. Yes. That's why I love you, man. right there.
That's a no-brainer.
Easy, easy. All right. So Brian Dennehy is still working on stuff today. Let's see. The last thing he was in was a TV show, and he is in a couple of other things too. The Adventures of Buddy Thunder, Life Support, Long Day Journey, and he is still just making good stuff. Let's go ahead and move on to the 10 herself, Bo Derek.
What is she up to these days? I feel like I haven't really seen her in too many headlines. Is she even still around?
Bo Derek recently was in her last acting role was The Last Sharknado.
That would be why I have not seen
It's About Time. That's, I'm not joking. It's called The Last Sharknado. It's About Time.
Yeah, because that's how everyone felt. That's how everyone felt with the first one. That's
and she was in Sharknado 3. But she's done some TV movies and a bunch of other like TV shows and stuff that are, you know, just going back. But yeah, 10 was her second film ever that she was in, which, I mean, established her, obviously.
Obviously, because considering that it's still mentioned as one of her most notable films and roles.
And, I mean, considering that, let's see, when did 10 come out? 10 came out in...
I think it came out before I was born.
Well, yeah, that's not exceptionally hard to do, though. 1979, so that was even before I was born. And then Tommy
Boy...
That's
really hard to do.
And then Tommy Boy came out in 1995. And so, I mean, even all that time later on, you know...
That's like 15 years later or something
like
that.
And she's still popping out of that pool and stuff. It's like, I mean, she took care of herself. All right, on to the next one. We got, well, I mean, it's Dan Aykroyd, so.
What's he known for?
We don't really need to cover Dan Aykroyd. If you don't know who Dan Aykroyd is.
Then you're not into comedy.
No, you're not. It's like, and you've missed out on some of the funniest things ever.
But before we skip ahead of him, the only role that I'll bring out that's not one of his more known roles, and whatnot, is his role in Gross Point Blank with.
He's such a great character! Oh my god!
Well, like, both of that's like. Well, first of all, they deliver such great lines, and they're both fast talkers.
Yeah.
So, like, that's just an excellent pair up for like nemesis sort of, you know, mm-hmm. people and whatnot, and their physical acting when they're next to each other, they both have their hands on a gun and pivoting around, trying to like both aim at each other at
yes,
all times.
Yes.
And but the best scene that I'll end this on from that movie is when both of them are in the restaurant. Neither of them look at a menu, and both of them spit out such complex breakfast orders to the waitress.
Without, yes.
They don't mess it up. It is just quick, concise. And
this is what I want.
How, you know. I can only imagine how many times it took for them to like go through that and like just make sure they got it right. But
yeah,
excellent underrated sort of role of his.
Gross Point Blank is a great, great movie.
So.
And I do love Dan Aykroyd in that one. But for me, it will always be him as Elwood in the Blues Brothers and him being on the Ghostbusters movies.
Oh, so, yes.
Easily.
So who we have next?
Okay. Up next on the list, we have... Well, Julie Warner, who played Michelle. Let me go ahead and see what she has been up to. Wow. She has not changed much
in
the last several years.
Then about a month ago, I had my wife watch a movie for the first time that I had been watching since I was a kid. She's also known for a little another under-the-radar movie from Indian Summer.
Oh, yeah.
Came out in the 90s that had Alan Arkin and Bill Paxton and Kevin Pollak. And also has a small bit from director Sam Raimi in it.
Oh, wow.
If you didn't know that.
So the last thing that she has been involved in was a movie called Unbelievable with 5 exclamation points.
five exclamation points
after that. So she is still working, and that is very nice. Let's go ahead and skip past some of these other people. Like, we don't need to know who young Tommy was because obviously there's no picture there. Or any of the frat boys or any of these people.
Hey, now, wait a minute. You went through quite a few characters, but you did not bring up Paul.
Well, I mean, there's probably a good reason for that. I mean, like, let's see. I mean, I'm going down the list on IMDb, and I can't seem to find him.
You won't.
Anywhere. And why is that?
Because he was under contract with another project at the time and could not legally get credit for his role in the film, even though he had a lot of screen time with it and a lot of dialogue.
Yes, so there you go. The fabulous Rob Lowe and is not actually listed on the even on IMDb. He is not listed as being in this movie. He's not even listed as being uncredited in this movie.
No, he cannot legally be anything in the film. And he's gone on to a few a few interviews that were done for it. Somebody pointed out to him, and he said it took, I think he said somewhere around like 10, 15 years before people started noticing that he's not credited. And even in, obviously the credits of the film when they roll.
Yeah, nothing.
Not in there. It's like he didn't exist in the film. You just saw him on screen.
He's literally listed in the rest of the cast alphabetically. That's what he's listed at. So Rob Lowe, who of course was really good in practically everything that he does, but he was in Wayne's World. Obviously, as the
he's the antagonist in that film as well.
He's the antagonist of that one.
He's also really he had a really great role in the original Brat Pack for St. Elmo's Fire.
Yes,
which was before Breakfast Club, and for whatever reason, a lot of people don't know about that Brat Pack.
But I really, really liked him in Parks and Rec when his character finally showed up there, which was really funny. And actually, for one season, he was on another TV show that my wife and I absolutely loved. And that was The Grinder.
Never saw it.
He plays an actor who was on a hit lawyer TV show for like 10 years or something like that, and then quit. And but it's the typical lawyer show,
right?
Of like he finally gets the person to confess while they're on the stand and like all of that, and then he's constantly talking about how he I'm the grinder and blah blah blah. It's like, and then he, once the person confesses, then he goes, grinder rests. And like it's like it's really over the top and cheesy. But the great thing about it is that he leaves the show, moves back to the Midwest or whatever with the rest of his family, of which is played by Fred Savage as his brother, and his dad and his brother are legit lawyers.
Oh,
and
his, no.
And Fred is really, really bad at it. He's not a bad lawyer, but he's bad at being in front of people and presenting everything. So he's really good at like researching and like getting all of the evidence together. But when he's got to sit in front of like a jury, he literally has cards and he just like reads the cards and all that.
That's great.
And then Rob Lowe shows up and he's just like, yeah, I'll be a lawyer. And Fred's just like, you can't. Like, you're an actor. You didn't go to law school. But he's just like, it's like, no. But it's just so funny that like how he presents everything, and he's like so narcissistic and yet at the same time loves his family. Like it was such a good show. It got canceled after one season.
Oh, of course.
I was super pissed off about that.
And of course.
But he was also in, the last one that I saw him in was Super Troopers 2.
Oh my God! Yeah,
he played Guy Lafranc.
We just watched that over the weekend. My father-in-law watched it for the first time. We went and saw it in theaters, and man, you want to talk about a sort of out there role for him with his horrible French accent?
that Canadian, like French Canadian esque, kind of accent that he has, which was really over the top and bad. But
everyone was. I think I'm sure knowing how they do stuff, that was totally supposed to be how they wanted it.
But there were elements of that movie that are hilarious. I know a lot of people absolutely. Were just like, well, it's not as good as the first one. I was like, it's hard to outdo it. But God dang, it was a funny movie.
Well, we'll definitely have to put that one on the list.
That'll definitely. We'll just do both of them. Just do both of them back to back and then be done with it.
But no, Rob Lowe, that's your fun tidbit of the film, is that, such a well-known and famous actor will never get credited for this film because of a contract from way back when.
Yes.
So that about rounds it out. Who directed this film, though, before we wrap this up?
So this is definitely one that I thought was interesting, to say the least. Because this was directed by Peter Segal, or Segal. I'm pretty sure it's Segal. He is responsible for a bunch of different good movies.
Like? Okay.
Well, I mean, just here up at the top, is what he's known for is Get Smart, Naked Gun, Grudge match, which was Robert De Niro versus Sylvester Stallone, and 51st Dates. But going through some of these stuff, like he's directed episodes of the show Shameless. He did The Longest Yard in 2005, Anger Management, which was a great movie. My Fellow Americans. Okay, I'm going to give him a pass for Nutty Professors 2. But,
everyone has one bad one.
And, I mean, obviously his first, very first movie, though, which is the cult classic Bikini 2, The Saga Continues.
Ah, very nice, very nice. So but, suffice to say, it sounds like he definitely knows his way around a good comedy script.
Yes.
I want to
go back and watch his stuff and actually like pick up on like the directing that he actually does for his movies, because I don't think I ever really noticed until just watching Tommy Boy again that it's so well done.
Right. So kind of basically see what elements he carries over in his films and whatnot. Kind of like how Tarantino always has like the, you know, under angle, like from the trunk sort of view. And then you have Michael Bay that does the low angle action shots with all the explosions.
Yeah.
So I agree. That'd be really neat to see exactly what all he carries over and likes to use, kind of makes his films his own. But no, he definitely did hit a home run with this one.
Yeah.
To say the least, he did very well directing it, and hope he continues work. I'll be definitely looking forward to some of his future projects. Assuming he has some coming up.
Yes. So ranking.
Ranking.
Yeah.
I got a feeling that this week's ranking is going to be a little bit better than last week's.
What did I give last week? Last week was a 5 for me.
Last week was a 3.5 for me.
Yeah. So with this one, though, I mean, you got to rank it amongst comedies. And that's how I'm giving this one a solid 9.
Solid nine. We are dead even. I'm giving this one a 9 as well.
There you go. Yes. I think it's our first actual agreement.
Oh, yeah.
So
it's hard to disagree on this film, though.
Yeah. I mean, like, I can't really tell you why I'm not giving it a 10. And maybe it's because, like, while I do love this movie, it is not, like, my go-to comedy.
Well, that and, you know, first of all, we are semi-elitist when it comes to film. So
that's true.
Nothing is ever going to be perfect to us.
I could probably come up with a couple of comedies that are 10s for me, but yeah, comedies are to me are exceptionally hard to get right. You can do drama and like nail a lot of like, you know, emotion and that kind of stuff, but to deliver comedy, that's hard.
And to deliver it through a full-length feature film that, you know, actually makes you laugh through all of it, not just in the first bit of it, and then you're like, okay, when the hell is this thing going to end?
Yeah.
So not 9 for both of us, hands down.
Easy.
Tommy Boy, always going to be a classic, always a good watch. You know, turn on the TV if it's on, it doesn't matter where it's at, I'm probably going to finish it.
Yep.
So once again, if you have social media, please find us on Facebook. You know, you can search for us at Grab Your Popcorn. If you search through YouTube channels and want to listen to us that way, we also have our YouTube channel. You can listen to our episodes on there. We are hoping in the future to get a little bit of on-air time. Mess around, maybe we'll do some trailer reviews or something like that.
You just wait and see. We got stuff planned. It may not happen for a few months, but we got stuff planned.
But in the meantime, please, again, share us, like us, do all that good jazz. Help us get out there. And, of course, we always want to hear your feedback. So if you have any comments, concerns, complaints, which I will never care about, please voice them.
Oh, I will argue with these people to the very end.
I didn't say anything about arguing. I just said I won't care about
them. Yeah, you won't care. You won't care, but I'll see them, and I'm just going to go off on them because I got no problem arguing online. None whatsoever. But I have time and Google on my side. Okay? That's it.
Thank you, everybody, again. I am going to be signing off. Once again, don't forget to grab your popcorn.